Welcome to the 21st episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. I'm the co-founder of Reckless Dice and your host, Jesse Gitzman-Burke. Co-hosting with me is our lich-like troubadour, Lester Crowe, and his strolling bones.
Greetings.
So how's everybody doing this fine week?
I'm doing all right. I woke up just recently because I worked the night shift, so I'm still stretching, but I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Hanging in there. It's been busy. We've got the new site up and running. Many of you, assuming you found this episode, you've discovered that the Reckless Dice podcast has transitioned to a new RSS feed and has a brand new site up and running. Some of you, you know, recklessdice.com still goes straight to the site. Previously, recklessdice.com forwarded to a different URL. But now we've got the new site up and running with some new bells and whistles. Also, though, there is a new RSS feed. So some of you who subscribe to the podcast through iTunes may need to resubscribe to continue to get new episodes.
It's shiny, eh?
I'm happy with it. I hop in there every day and kind of make little tweaks and adjustments trying to improve upon what we've got. But hopefully, I apologize for the inconvenience, but hopefully the transition goes smoothly for everybody. Other fun news is we put some pictures of the shirts that we've been talking about up on the site. And just for kicks, I got a couple emails of some people who wanted to order them. So I made a Zazzle.com store item that you can view and put the logo on a shirt, or order straight up the one that that I designed and ordered a few of for myself and friends and family. So if you're so inclined, there they are.
They're nice. I like them. I like the design.
I'm gonna order you one, Lester, and I think I need to order you an extra long, right?
Extra long, sure. I'm really slender though. Like you said, I think you put it well when you said gaunt a few episodes ago. So I don't know. Don't get it too big because it'll drown me, and then I'll never.
I'm gonna
wear
it like a slender muumuu.
That would be awesome, man.
Long and thin. It'll be like a tube sock.
It'll be like a '60s shirt. Those weird paisley shirts that come down past the knees. That'd be awesome.
Yes, that thing. So other fun news is we're going to have a few new live sessions up and running and underway since we finished the Witch's Song, our fourth episode with a very fun finale, which is now up on the site. We're getting ready to tackle the horror at Hugeldahl and also kick off another gaming group nearby locally I play here, where we'll be recording those sessions as well. And Lester, I know you're looking to take on some new fantasy grounds and begin engaging the community in running some more online games. Do you want to tell us a little more about that?
Well, I've had a couple of people who have seemed really interested, and I think they emailed you originally, and then you forwarded me the emails. I've been communicating with them, and there's a couple guys who are really interested. I'm sure there's more than just a couple who are really interested, but I've been communicating with a couple. One is currently working on adding information into Fantasy Grounds so that we can use it. Use it more effectively, I guess. And I don't think that's going to start happening anytime in the nearest future. So it'll probably be about a month or so before we start playing, but I'm kind of slowly doing the same thing as, his name is, Ander, I think, or Andrew, where I'm trying to add information into my fantasy grounds, but I'm really technologically incapable. So it's taking me a really long time to do even the smallest additions to Neil's great base product, or whatever you want to call it.
So if you make additions to Neil Foster's Fantasy Ground 2 rule set, does that break the rule set that he's created? So like when he makes an update to it, do you have to go back and redo everything, or is it more modular based where your adjustments and modifications are stay intact? Do you know?
See, I'm really technologically impaired, like I said, so I'm not absolutely positive. I do know that, I mean, all the stuff you do manually on your computer. I'm assuming he's doing that for legal reasons, which is smart.
I recall him saying that.
Which is smart because, I mean, we don't want to be just giving the rules away. I mean, you need to get the game itself. You have to have Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay the 3rd Edition to be able to utilize what he's made for Fantasy Grounds.
Well, that was kind of one of the dangers of using the online components, was that everybody felt like they were kind of skirting the rules on whether or not you were providing too much information to the point where you might not need to purchase content.
Mm. Oh, you definitely have to purchase content, and you have to enter everything painstakingly in by hand. So
each card, you know, each mutation.
Exactly.
But you know, the framework he set up though is beautiful. So.
Oh yeah, it's very smooth. It looks wonderful. Really easy to use. Really easy to understand. So hopefully, I'm hoping in the next couple months here to get some seriously consistent games going on over Fantasy Grounds.
Cool. Hey, I'd love to hear if anybody else out there is using Neil Foster's Fantasy Ground 2 rule set successfully, or if they're having trouble, or if they're having a great time with it. I'd love to hear some feedback on how you guys are using it, what you'd like to see, and really just you know, how it's working out for you. That's... Also, if anybody's using Map Tools, you know, I know I haven't updated my rule set for that in a while, but I think that framework was pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one's kind of the paid and one's the unpaid version of playing online, I guess you could say. But I'd love to hear where the flow of energy has gone on that and where people are leaning towards.
Well, if I can manage to save up a bit of money over the next couple months, I would like to get to upgrade my Fantasy Ground subscription to like the ultimate one, because that way I could just play with anybody and not have to worry about people having paid for it. But it's really pricey, so I can't see that being the case
for
a while.
What does that run? It was about $150?
It's $150. It would be $100 for me. Well, it's like $140 or something like that. I think it's $100 for me to upgrade from what I have to that.
Okay, so you already have like the $40 base version.
I have the base version.
$100 or so on top of that to bump it up.
Yeah, so I can play games with other people online. I have the full working version. I just can't, like, I believe the GM version is required in order to do certain aspects to it, like do editing and create your own,
yeah,
your own content for it. But eventually.
So any new news from Fantasy Flight over the last few weeks?
I've been paying more attention lately to what they've been announcing for the Lord of the Rings living card game, because it has been so long since they've really released anything. It's been several weeks since they put out that information on Heroes Call. So.
Yeah, the last update was Heroes Call, which we covered. And so we're kind of waiting anxiously. I think we'll expect the next update we see from them is the actual release of the Lure of Power.
I think
the Slaanesi supplement.
I think it's coming too. I believe in the upcoming, it says that it's on the boat, I believe.
I mean, I would imagine we're actually going to see that within a week, if not 2 weeks. I mean, I think that's like right around the door.
Pre-Christmas, right. Yeah. And then I think it's
early this month, I would imagine. That's been on the boat for several weeks now.
Yeah, it's on the boat. They said to expect it by the fourth quarter. So I would say, yeah, you're probably right. Sometime mid to late November is probably a good idea for Christmas.
Cool.
So I'm really looking forward to that. Like,
well, I'm crossing my fingers then that we'll be reviewing that for our next episode.
Yeah, that would be great. Please, FFG, send us a special copy and we'll review it for you.
All right. So our main topic for this episode is going to be actually a response to a lengthy email we received, which I found very thought-provoking, which was mainly centered around handling bad players or players that are difficult and... really, what do you do with them, and how do you get yourself out of a sticky situation, whether you're a GM or another player in that group? So we're going to take some time running through some of our experiences with that and hopefully provide some tips and tricks to either not be a bad player or how to handle players that might be particularly difficult. Following that, we'll do another healthy Q&A section, since we've got a load of great emails and Twitter responses from you guys. So after the break, we'll be right back. And we're back. So we're going to tackle handling bad players. And this is an email from Bojan. And he, so I apologize a little bit ahead of time. I'm going to read his whole email. It's a little bit long, but I think it's got a lot of great content in there. And it's actually pretty funny at parts too. But I think everybody who's ever played a role-playing game will appreciate the pain he's gone through here. And, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be able to jump in with some great suggestions for handling bad players. So with that, here we go. Hi, I have a question on how to deal with problematic players. I have a player who is not that good at the lore of Warhammer, and I have a problem with him. This is the situation. We were playing the Eye for an Eye campaign, and the problems with the player started right at the beginning. I started telling the story of how the PCs are in this town and how they are searching for work. First of all, none of them were literate, even the wizard who said, F literacy, I want to cast fireballs as a gray wizard. Insert grimace face here. So I introduced them to the first NPC that was a scribe. And soon as I said that there was an NPC, the thief of the group wanted to steal from him. I DM'd that the scribe didn't have anything of value on him at that point, and the thief wanted to take the robes from the scribe instead. Insert second grimace face. I ignored the thief, and as he always tries to pull something like this off, he is a wood elf thief. I think he was kicked out of Athel Lauren for kleptomania. So starting to read the message from the storyline, and as soon as I mentioned the Red Moon Inn, the wizard stated that it sounded like a brothel, and I jokingly stated that further down the street there is the Red Lantern Inn that is the brothel, and the two numbskulls, the thief and the wizard, wanted to go there, while the human mercenary and the dwarf hunter understood that I was joking. As soon as I mentioned that they wanted to go get the information from the brothel, I told them that the brothel I told them that at the brothel they didn't know who the guy they were looking for was, and that they might try the Red Moon Inn. So after that encounter at the brothel, and by this point the derailment of the campaign was inevitable, they reluctantly went to the proper inn, and they did something that I was not expecting from people who've played RPGs on the PC. They didn't go and ask the bartender where Hendrik is, but they started asking the patrons of the inn. After discussion with a drunk patron, they went to ask the innkeeper that told them that Hendrik will be with them shortly, and the two numbskulls didn't want to wait for him. I forgot to mention that the wizard didn't want to take the quest because of the physical work, because he had strength of two. Now they went out of the common room and into the dormitories and cornered Hendrik and almost started beating him for the information out of him and to steal from him. After some talking through the persuasion, they have finally agreed to help him and his master. The entire time the wizard was creeped out by Hendrik for some unknown reason, probably because he was thinking of he was a pedophile in disguise or something. Insert third grimace face. So after another discussion with the wizard player about the game being stupid and without choice and freedom, I think this interpretation of freedom is go to Altdorf, beat the living out of the Emperor, and while he is on the ground, teabag him, like in Halo and GTA 4. So they started with the wagon drive. They arrived at the encounter in the woods where there is where the campaign grinded to a halt. I think it grinded to a halt a long time ago. But the wizard fired the magic bolt at the gore warrior and did only 2 damage, while the dwarf hunter did enough damage that the beastman was left with only 2 wounds. Upon seeing this, the wizard started to argue with me how did a magic missile do so little damage while a crossbow did so much. And I did take into account everything while calculating the damage. I explained that the rules for hit and damage to him, but he didn't stop. I simply snapped and started clearing the table and told him, if you don't like it, there's the door. Have a nice day. I escorted the entire group out of my house and closed the door. Now, to kind of sum up here, I know what I did was not a nice thing, but I was simply tired. We'd spent 3 hours on our first part of the game without making progress. I prepared for the campaign for 2 weeks, and seeing my work be destroyed by 2 trolls because they think they can do everything in the setting, they literally suck out my will to play the system. So, After that, the question is, how do you deal with people who constantly nag about things that I explained to them a million times and are willing to destroy a campaign just for some LOLs? Bojan. And kind of a lengthy tale, but I think everybody can feel the pain of that one. I think we've all been there in some RPG or another where someone is out there who just isn't feeling it, isn't excited to play, isn't immersed in it, and they just feel absolutely compelled to be difficult.
Brutal.
So I kind of just couldn't help but laugh that whole time because I've been there. But have you ever been in a game where you were GMing, Lester, and you felt that the players were so just unhinged from the game that they made it difficult for everybody else?
Oh, Lord. Constantly, man. That is a constant battle that I have, finding proper players that suit my GMing style. It's kind of been a problem my whole role-playing career, if you will. I just recently, actually, when I first got into Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the third edition, I was trying to get my local group to kind of play it, and I had a creepy, like an eerily similar experience to Bojan here, where my group, they weren't seasoned role players at all. So I think that led to it more than them necessarily being ignorant or combative or whatever. But they essentially the same sort of thing happened where they didn't understand kind of the world. They didn't understand the setting, but they also weren't willing to put the time or effort into even do the tiniest bit of research, which I gave them. I gave them access to all of my books. I gave them access to all sorts of information that I have pertaining to the Warhammer world. And like Bojan, I spent a long time prepping the game itself, and I put a lot of effort into it. And then to see the players just kind of sit there, puffing on coral, paying no attention to what was going on, you know, text messaging people, not focused at all. It's actually a slight. And I wish that I was more like him. I wish I had just said, there's the door, have a nice day, because I was frustrated. And I've had worse experiences before as a game master, but I think it's because I fell in love with this game. So I was just head over heels for this game. I really wanted it to work with a group that I could play consistently with. However, they basically just derailed it through either lack of interest in the game or lack of understanding on role playing or lack of respect for somebody who's essentially hosting. I'm hosting a game for them. I'm giving them an opportunity to have fun, and I'm spending a lot of time preparing it, and they're not seeing that aspect of the game, so they're not respecting me at all.
He hits on several key points in his email, but one point that I think he did not really mention, which you just did, is the amount of work that a GM has to put in order for the players to have a good time. Mm-hmm. You know, the players get to jump in and contribute a tremendous amount during gameplay, but the pre-game show is generally all on the shoulders of the GM.
And that's where the majority of the work lies, too.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
It's not work to say my character, you know, climbs up the ladder and sees a naked woman in the window. I mean, that's really, that's just fun. I mean, there is no real
work. Which is now our default boon answer.
Yeah.
So he brought up a couple things that I wanted to talk about. One is from the email, I'm assuming... I can't really tell whether he, the GM, has played the game before or not, or if this is the first time he's been the GM for Warhammer. However, I think it's pretty apparent that the players, this is probably their first experience with Warhammer. Given from his statement about the lore, and it sounds like they have a pretty poor understanding of the rule system. So it sounded like this was going to be his introductory game to his gaming group.
It also sounds like they play a lot of PC role-playing games as opposed to pen and paper, which is completely different.
It is. But you're right. There were a lot of telltale signs of people who, you know, pick up quests from WoW or, you know, Halo and things like that, where you're going for quick laughs and you're playing with a bunch of 13-year-olds who want nothing better to do than shoot you and then teabag your head. Mm-hmm. So I really felt that his I wonder if he didn't maybe even set up the expectations of the players or what he wanted from them early on, because you could definitely tell that those people who he was playing with really wanted to joke around and goof off. And he was very, very hoping to follow the written storyline. And, you know, to a certain degree, you can allow your players to go off and go on strange tangents, like explore the brothel down the street. But, you know, for his particular play style, it seemed like he wanted to run the adventure, you know, by the book. And for an introductory game for people, I think that's probably the way to go. But how do you handle players who just really want to, literally who want to avoid the story the GM wants to tell?
Well, I do my best to attempt to weed those players out before I start playing, because I'm very easily frustrated when it comes to things that I care about, things that I put effort into, and, you know, things that generally make me happy. When someone's there and they're there, I mean, in my opinion, if someone's there and their whole purpose is to not follow the storyline, they're there to create conflict, and for no other reason than to just create conflict. So I try to weed those players out well before I even start playing. However, if I were to have a player like that in a game of mine, I would try. I think communication is the biggest tool that a game master can use to kind of work problems out with his players. I would try to sit down with that player and ask them what it was about the experience that they weren't finding exciting, and then try to cater a little more towards that. But I mean, it's a slippery slope, because if you start just giving over to this all the time, then I mean, the game master is a player too, essentially, and they should be allowed to get fun out of it. And in my opinion, they should be able to get more fun out of it than the players, because they put way more effort into it. Mm-hmm. So I think that really players like that should be talked with.
So it sounds like rule number one is play with people you know you're going to enjoy playing with.
Exactly.
And, you know their personalities ahead of time. Now, of course, we all know people will still get through the screening process, or however you want to call it. You may only have a group of friends your gaming group of friends may not allow for, you know, new people from all over the place to participate. You may have your group of five or six guys who, you know, game every weekend and you want to try something new, and you're trying to get them into role playing and they're used to PC games or Xbox or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't always have that liberty. So, to what degree you can screen the people you play with or set their expectations ahead of time of what this game is about, how you like to play, what they want. But then, you know, kind of going into less to your second point, which is talk to the people, have open communication. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to be like, hey, dude, I'm noticing you're really kind of purposefully screwing stuff up here. Yeah. What, you know, what's not working for you?
I noticed that you suck. Why do you suck so much? No, I mean, that's not okay. This is supposed to be helpful. So that's just me being bitter about bad experiences. Really, you want to be as open with your players as possible. Discuss with them mainly, like you said, Jesse, what is it about the experience that you want to get out of it as a player? And then you need to allow the player to understand what it is that you as the game master want to get out of the experience. And you have to relate to them that it's a mutual experience, and that by them doing what they're doing, not only are they ruining your experience, but they're ruining everybody else's experience.
It sounds to me a little bit from what I read is that these are guys who are new to role playing, not mm-hmm. not just role playing, they're new to role-playing pen and paper games, not yeah. just new to Warhammer. So I'm wondering if they could have benefited a little bit ahead of time of how to play. And I don't mean that from a rules perspective, but I mean how to role-play,
exactly.
How to be a role-playing character, the do's and don'ts, the, you know, hey, this is kind of the douchebag move. This is how you kind of work with characters. This is how you work with a GM. I think that probably could have avoided some of the grimace faces.
And hence this podcast, which will hopefully go viral, and everybody who role plays will listen to it and be like, oh, I've been doing some of these things as a player. Maybe I should get my thumb out of my and, you know, start being part of the team. Cause that's the whole point, is that it's a group of people getting together, attempting to enjoy the experience. That being said, if that's how you find enjoyment, is by monkeying around and destroying other people's hard work, then you're just period. But if you want a different experience out of a role-playing game, you should find a group that is conducive for that, because the world of Warhammer definitely has avenues. You could play a full-on comedy set in the Warhammer world.
But I mean, we're talking, there's different levels of comedy here. I mean, we're talking, we're talking, you know, tea bags and trying to derail and getting your lols out of that.
Yeah, that's not
comedy. I find when somebody doesn't want to play, and I don't mean that you do not want to play, I mean you do not want to play, that one of two things happens. And you, me personally, when I'm not feeling it, I kind of shut down and get quiet. Now, I know other people, when they're not feeling it, they get super aggressive or try to create conflict in order to make it more interesting. And that's the kind of people I think this guy ran into. So, you know, let's jump onto his second kind of main problem here, which was he's got a story he wants to do, and his players are trying to derail. He's trying to send him down a very focused path to teach him how to play, you know, with, you know, all the good thoughts intact, at least at the beginning. And then the players want to go to the brothel. They want to steal. You know, they have that typical thief who just wants to steal anything he can because it's in the game system. Yeah. And his players are getting upset because they say, "Well, I should be able to do this. Why aren't you letting me?" Mm-hmm. And from a practical, you know, scenario, he's just trying to have the players not do things just because he wants their actions to be purposeful. Mm-hmm. To what degree do you think players should get the opportunity to explore beyond the scope of the story?
Well, I think that it all depends on the game master. Some game masters are really good at just running with it and really good at doing improvisation, which is difficult for some GMs. I can do it to a degree, but I'm much more of a focused and prepared GM. I have to be prepared to understand the world. And then that comes down to, is the game master willing to prepare a sandbox environment? It would take somebody who understands role-playing and understands the setting, in this case, the Warhammer world, very well in order to allow the players to just run willy-nilly and do whatever they want. The system is such that you could allow your players to do whatever, but once again, it would take a very skilled game master and one with a lot of patience, because players do, I mean, there's like five things that players decide to do, and that's it. I mean, players really aren't that creative. There are very few, most really creative players are also game masters. So I think that players should be allowed to a degree to do what they want, but at the same time, using that communication we were talking about, you should get together with your group before you even sit at table to play, and you should discuss what it is that you want out of the game. I think that's the
biggest benefit. It sounds to me like there are a couple different types of games that can be played. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as GMing goes and storytelling goes, there's, you know, there's the fully scripted, you know, by the book adventure, which is the ones that generally we've done on the podcast as live sessions. We're running them, you know, as the book intends. Each play session is a chapter in the adventure, and we play it as written. And the players are allowed to kind of maneuver within that scope. But if our GM detects that they're kind of going too far out of line to keep it within the scope of the story, we'll do what we can to kind of rearrange the setting to funnel them back in. Now, the second type I see is one where you're playing a scripted story, but you allow the players quite a bit of freedom to maneuver around and change the order of things and really kind of cater to what the players want to experience without really trying to influence their decisions heavily. Mm-hmm. And those tend to work when you have a group that is a little more dedicated and a little more experienced that can meet more regularly, because that might turn what would otherwise be a 3-session game in scenario one, that might turn into a 4 or 5 session game, because you get a lot of subplots building because players are going off doing their own things. And I think the third kind is the polar opposite from the first example, which is where you have let the players completely drive the story, and the GM has created this sandbox environment, as you called it, Lester, where they can really do anything they like.
Yeah.
And the GM will create a story for whatever the players happen to be doing. And, you know, there might be some overarching campaign that he's trying to weave into it. But, you know, in all likelihood, the players really have full control. And I think that's really set aside for where you have very experienced players and a very experienced GM and a group that meets regularly. Any kind of pickup groups, I think you're in trouble if you're going to do number 2 or number 3 in that group.
Yeah, I personally prefer the middle ground. I think that is the perfect place to find yourself as a game master and a playing group. But at the same time, it takes a lot of work. And like you said, it does take a dedicated play group. Sandboxing can become, it can just get out of hand. Like, especially if you have players like that who just want to like play World of Warcraft, or they want to play Halo. Like you said, they just want to go kill everything that they can because they can, because it is part of the game. I mean, if you want to go kill somebody, you can. But I mean, as a game master, things you can do, you can introduce all sorts of conflict. You can introduce all sorts of repercussions for bad decisions. Mm-hmm. You know,
I find that third option to kind of the lack of focus of that third option is really what could lose players if they're not very dedicated.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that tremendous amount of focus in option number one, which is by the book, that probably maintains the most focus from players if you can be a very direct and assertive GM to kind of bring everybody in.
But it all depends on the player.
It really does.
Themselves. If it's a problem player, if it's a person who feels like they have no control if they're being railroaded, then they're going to act out, and they're going to try to break the system. Because
you're right.
So, I mean, you have to give the player a little bit of leeway, especially players who have a tendency to do things like that. Otherwise, you know, I mean, if you just railroad somebody who obviously wants control of the situation to a degree, they're going to just do everything they can to ruin your experience.
My favorite example that I don't know where it came from, but it was, you know, you give the players control, but you're giving the players the illusion of control.
Yes.
You say, here, player, here's your 3 options, you know, open door 1, 2, or 3. And in reality, it doesn't matter what door they pick, they're still going to get the same result. You know, in your head, you know that because you built the story, and you know that whether they, you know, murder this one guy, pickpocket this other guy, or go on trail number 2, you know, all those 3 roads are going to result in the same outcome. But
all roads lead to Rome.
As far as the players are concerned, though, they made a choice that told their story, and then you just tell them what the result is. You can give the players a lot of control and then funnel them back into your story with the result of their actions. And maybe that's where this guy should have gone. Maybe with the brothel seems like kind of that was the straw that broke the camel's back, or maybe it was beating Lord Hendrick into a pulp in the inn. But maybe he could have made better use of the strong desire for the players to go to the brothel. Maybe they could have gotten the same information there in some other form, like maybe Hendrick was in that building instead.
Yeah, maybe he was fed up because he was wounded, therefore he went to the brothel to get a little bit of, you know, relaxation, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
I mean, or you could let your players go there, then they go and they, you know, we want to get nasty with the brothel patrons or with the prostitutes, for lack of a better word, and then you could just give them a disease.
Well, that too, yeah. Or you know, they could have been at the brothel entertaining themselves, and Lord Hendrick or Vern Hendrick came down looking for them in the brothel because they were late. Yes. You know, Vern found them instead of them finding him.
Exactly.
Yeah, there are some ways to force the story on the players.
I like to force consequences on the players if they do asinine things. If a player does something that is completely out of the character that they have created, or if they do something that is obviously intended to destroy the game. I just present them with consequences. You know, you try to steal too much stuff. Well, I'm going to increase the difficulty of thieving. I mean, and then if a player says, well, you're just doing that because you can. Well, but that's what you're, that's what the problem player is doing. You're just ruining the story because you can.
I like what you say there, but I'd also suggest maybe the exact opposite to that, which is, particularly for new players, make sure they have some success at something early so they can see, you know, give them some kind of reward for doing something. Show them how they're making progress.
Oh, but if they're a good player. But
even for bad players or new players, you might want to show them that it might be more fun to win something and have some success than it is to break things, and hopefully you can convert them. Because ideally, the last result is, screw it, we're packing up and leaving, everybody's a butthead.
Yeah.
But, you know, ideally you still want to kind of salvage the situation. If that's not possible, well then, you know, screw it. But let's tackle the very last bit here, which is, okay, everything's gone to hell. You're done. You're anxious. You're upset. Your game that you've spent weeks preparing is totally gone up in flames, and you have two guys who you really couldn't care less about now sitting across from you. You know, what do you do? Do you
rally step?
You rally step. There you go. Everybody, the party stress meter goes up a few.
You recover stress and fatigue equal to the amount of beers you drink during the rally step.
Well, I mean, I think too, at some point, is it cool just to say, dude, this is so not working. I'm sorry. I'm out.
Yeah, I think
It totally is acceptable. But, you know, I think hopefully it never gets to that point if you can have open and honest communication with your players, and they need to be reciprocating that.
If they're not, they're not the players for you, and you just need to find new players. I mean, that's my biggest problem.
That's when you hop on the forums and find some people who want to play online, because anybody who's playing online probably really wants to play.
Yeah, exactly. They're actively searching for games. Those are the people you want to play with, the people who really want to participate in a community event is essentially what it is. I mean, people who are there literally to have some laughs or whatever, you can do that. You could play Mario Bowling and, you know, have some laughs. If you're playing a role-playing game, it takes concentrated effort. It takes you need to be really focused. I mean, you don't want to take the fun out of it at all, but the fun gets destroyed for the people who want to have a good time by being serious, by playing a role-playing game. You know, like, it is a game. I mean, I've had this discussion with several people on YouTube, but role-playing game essentially is a game. But I am really against people who try to break the mechanics or create unrealistic characters so that they're like Bojan was talking here when he was talking about the damage. And I think the players in this case, obviously, because he's talking about PC games and the Halo tactics and stuff like that, they're obviously not, they're like power gamers. They're there. Mm-hmm. And they're thinking of it from a mechanical, from this is a game standpoint, as opposed to we're creating a story.
Maybe given the new player aspect and the way that these guys kind of sound like they like to play, I would maybe encourage some early combat to kind of get that going and get them excited. Because I bet you, if anything, that's where they'd see the action. And I know you're saying, well, dude, if they just go to the inn for 2 minutes and get on the wagon, there'd be a combat. But you know, maybe the campaign just needs to start out with a combat and get them in there dice rolling and hacking people to pieces, because it sounds like that's what they want
to
do.
Well, they go to the brothel. You could create a situation where they get into a fight with some ruffians or
maybe their whole adventure starts by them breaking out of jail. You know, who knows? Well, you know, you could have some fun with it.
But once again, you have a gray wizard who wants to throw fireballs, so he obviously isn't that interested in the story. He obviously doesn't care anything about the setting. So, I mean, I personally, in this situation, I think Bojan did the right thing. I mean, save your own sanity, man, and then go look for players who are actually conducive to your playstyle. That's
good call. So with that, we're going to wrap up that topic and head off into a Q&A section right after the break. As always, you can submit your questions and comments to recklessdice@gmail.com, on Facebook under Reckless Dice, or hit us up on Twitter at Reckless Dice. Brad from Spotsylvania, Virginia, emails. We actually do need to find out where that is, too. He challenged us to locate Spotsylvania. Spotsylvania. I call that's an awkward word to look at. I recently went up on a business trip where I listened to your entire podcast series while traveling in an attempt to glean a better understanding of the mechanics and the world I would be engaged in. It helped me tremendously. This was especially true when you guys discussed the primary evils and the mechanics spotlight from week to week. Actually, I'm looking forward to finishing up that series when the Slaanesi supplement comes out. Mm. So close. It was during one of these podcasts that you mentioned possibly running some sample games with groups from Fantasy Grounds 2. Thus, we get to the crux of this email, in which he asked the following question. If one were interested in learning the mechanics and the world in greater detail, would one be able to request a spot in one of your Fantasy Grounds sessions, even if it was not a campaign, but rather a one-shot or a two ordeal?
Well, I think that kind of what we're trying to do right now is we're trying to set up a stable of people through the Fantasy Flight Games forums and through the Reckless Dice podcast. We're kind of trying to set up a stable of people who want to play online. There are already several active games going on. And right now we're kind of we were discussing this earlier about how we're kind of in the process of making my version of Fantasy Grounds playable, whereas me as a game master is comfortable running it. And that could take a couple months. There is
The idea then is that you're going to start heading up a few games and inviting community members to join you.
I would love to play games and I would love to game master games. So I do have, I'm currently building a very small three-part campaign that could be done in maybe three or four, 2 to 4 hour sessions. And I would love to play that online, but that's going to take me another couple months to enter the information into Fantasy Grounds and get a working knowledge of it where I'm comfortable running a game. Mm-hmm. Plus, I also would need to get my hands on, or I would like to get my hands on Pamela so I can actually record what goes on so we can have this for the community to listen to.
Sure. I think what we'll probably end up doing in the near future is get a couple one-off games or even some exploratory sessions with Fantasy Grounds once we get the ultimate GM copy or whatever the formal name for that is, and we can help people learn how to use the system. In one of our previous episodes, we put a call out to any of the community who wants to begin running some sessions for other people online, and we've had some responses mm-hmm. to that. It's going to take a little bit, but we're trying to coordinate the interested parties and kind of figure out what we're capable of running and sharing and, you know, kind of put people together. So the long and the short of it is stay tuned. If you are interested, shoot us an email. We'll try and be the tape that holds some of that together.
Yeah, 2012 will be a good year for online play, I have a feeling. I mean, it just takes time to learn this stuff, especially like I've said since the beginning. I'm technically incapable of really computer programming or anything like that. So it takes me a long time to learn this stuff. I guess the short answer to your question, Brad, is yes. You can definitely request to have a slot in one of our Fantasy Grounds sessions. We'd love to have new people, especially eloquent people, people who are really interested and want to be part of this. We encourage that, and we'd love to have you on board once we get the stuff rolling.
Good sound quality, or at least the ability to record in reasonable silence, is probably the only requirement. Well,
and you need the game. You obviously need the rules.
And your components, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Next question was sent to us by Will Ottoman Scribe Skates. And he said, "G'day, guys. Is this the guy from the Deep South?"
Either that, or if we're calling the Deep South Australia, that's the only people I know who do the g'day.
Good call. The real Deep South. I hope,
I guess it's a matter of perspective.
Yeah. I hope this finds you well. I have a couple of questions that have come to mind as I look into starting up Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay inspired by your podcast that we might like to hear. Well, we definitely would like to hear that, Will. He says, first thing is that having played Warhammer Fantasy Battles for a long time, I have a great affection for the fluff of the Warhammer world. Me too. However, having studied the Holy Roman Empire in the course of my tertiary education, I'm a tad over the whole German thing. Additionally, every adventure that seems to occur in the Empire seems to be some alternative of villagers are not what they seem, with the Chaos Cult involved in there somewhere. That is true, Will. Mm-hmm. That is definitely a problem that some of the pre-made adventures kind of present. Anyway, I want to bring in the richness of the Warhammer world to my games, which is, as a player character, I wanted to do by RPing a well-traveled Arabian scholar in the style of Ibn Battuta. I may be saying that wrong. Most likely am. I apologize. However, how would a GM indulge this desire within the players? Is bringing the distant and awesome parts of the Warhammer world into games at all a realistic proposition? I can imagine downtime and social interactions would be hard to come by in a Nekharin desert, and the lizardmen interact on a level entirely different to the fickle, impetuous of humans. So true. But I do think that there is really good role play that can be had in these situations.
So I know he has a two-part question. There's another one following that. But let's touch on a few things that he mentioned there, which I think are really interesting. He did point out very appropriately that most of the written adventures do kind of have the villagers are not what they seem, insert Chaos Cult here,
or cannibals.
As the marrow, sweet marrow adventure. Yeah. You know, I think that if you're kind of over the whole villagers are not what they seem scenario, it's time maybe to send your characters off on a more direct adventure or some kind of crazy thing out in the outskirts of the Empire. You know, the cultists and things like that are very, very interesting and a fun surprise, but if you're surprised with the same surprise every time, that can get old. So some kind of cool Arabian thing might be fantastic, or going off to the Darklands or Lustria. Mm. However, I kind of reserve that stuff for people who've been playing a while, because you have to get tired of the cultist thing before you need to go to that. Now, as a GM, you might be done with it because you've run that every time, but your players might still be. Mm. You know, if you have new players coming in, as kind of we often do, playing those more esoteric adventures in like Araby and stuff like that don't come up as often, because the players come in, all that content's still fresh.
Yeah. I mean, there's great resources out there for a game master to find. Like, there have been lots of community created things, like army books for Arabia and Norsica and all these, like mm-hmm. you said, esoteric places or far off places in the old world. But I do agree. I think it takes us not necessarily a seasoned group, but a group that is interested in the world at large and is willing to engage it. Other than that, I think the amount of information that you are given about the Empire as opposed to everything else makes it easier to use the Empire as the main crux of your setting.
Only two adventures that I've ever done that were outside of the Empire, you know, not including Kislev, were one we did I think it was the Lure of the Lich King, which was from second edition, and that one was a Nehekarin, like, straight up dungeon raid into a underground pyramid. So that one was actually a load of fun, and I had no problem getting the characters excited about doing that, because it was kind of like a good old fashioned treasure hunt. It had like the elements of the Mummy. Mm-hmm. Like kind of like the movie The Mummy, Indiana Jones, and all that. It was, you know, we had a really fun time actually getting to the location where they're going through the desert and the stony mountains and everything. And then, you know, going through all the traps and everything that are part of the dungeon. That was a blast. And almost the entire party died inside the tomb, except for two people who managed to escape. So it was like an adventure into the tomb. Something horrible happened. Half the party died. And then the rest of the adventure was the survivors trying to find a way out and survive. That was actually a blast. The other time was with Karak Asgal, or I think it was what it was called, the ruined one down in the far south near the Badlands, the Dwarven Stronghold.
Yeah, like the dwarves open up a whole nother can of worms that you can explore if you're sick of the whole German thing. One thing that I have to say is I agree really heavily with what Will says here about the pre-written adventures, or the majority of them. And I've been kind of tossing an idea around in my head since I got into Warhammer and learned about the old ones and stuff like that, to actually create a campaign. And I have some real basic ideas written down, but I haven't really explored it any further. But I was interested in doing a campaign based on the Chariots of Gods, Chariots of the Gods, which was written by Eric von Daniket. And there's a character who, his name is Erwig von Daniken, and he is based on the guy. And he said in the Warhammer world, and I wanted to run an adventure that took them all over the Warhammer world. So to like Lustria, to Egypt, or to Nehekara and places like that, to discover information about, you know, the old ones and the beginning of the world. I think that would be fantastic.
That would be a blast. But that's, again, you got to have a real dedicated, yeah, reoccurring gaming group for something like that.
For sure.
So what was his second part of his question?
The second part is related to the first in some extent, but he says here that the other thing that he likes about the old world is that it is, for lack of a better description, bloody grim. However,
okay, I'm going for Australia then.
Well, yeah. I mean, should we bleep that bloody out for Australian listeners? Anyway,
is that a bad word?
It's a terrible word, man. I could use an even worse word though. But anyway, we won't go into that.
You already dropped two A bombs earlier, so I have to bleep those out.
I want to be the bleeped Canadian. Sorry. Anyway, however, as a player, I find it really hard not to play the noble knight and not to make a step wrong. Thus, Tarek Bey, my Arabian scholar traveling in the Empire and studying their culture, ended up about as grim as the prospect of a sleep-in and pancakes on a Sunday morning. Any advice on ways to bring the grim to characters? So he's basically asking, how do you make your characters more grim? Well, I'm going to answer in short form and say that I think that the Warhammer world is actually so broad that you don't have to have grim characters. There is a comical aspect to it. And if that's what your players enjoy, you could create a comedy. But if you were looking to create a grim nature,
I think it's the fun part is you got to create some faults for your character. Your character, yeah, may be the impetuous knight who's so noble and wonderful.
He's got hemorrhoids.
He's got, yeah, there you go. Or, you know, maybe he's also partly racist towards, yeah, a certain kind of group, or he creates some conflict with him where he actually legitimately hates something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does it, whether it's a type of people, a class, a color, you know, whatever, and pancakes on a Sunday morning sets him off. You know, you just find something that gives you an excuse to play something difficult where your character gets upset or angry at something that will create that kind of personality conflict. Mm-hmm. I think your guy needs, because it is tough always being the good guy, and you know, you want to occasionally blow up at somebody and chew them out.
And there are no cut and clear good guys in the Warhammer world. Every one of them in the mythos
have a dark path,
something bad about them. I mean, look at what was his name, Asurion. Was that his name? The first elven prince that fought the demons? I can't remember. I think it was Asurion, but that might be one of the gods of the elves. But off the top of my head, I can't recall what his name was. But he, you know, he went and drew the sword out of the phoenix sword and became the phoenix king, the first phoenix king and all that. But he was like, it was dark and it's sad what happened to him. I mean, from the decision he made, his entire lineage, his entire, you know, all of his children, are cursed essentially. So I mean, but he's like essentially really, really, really good because he was the force, one of the major forces in defeating chaos the first time it happened in the old world. So
what you need is you need to be put into a position where you're forced to make a decision where both scenarios are bad.
Yeah, like exactly. Or I mean, if you're looking to, you know, spice your character up, create a backstory. Maybe something terrible happened to the guy in the backstory. Give him an insanity. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about this game is that it's modular. So you can take the different cards and abilities and have them. I mean, I'd be really interested in playing a character who starts with one eye missing or something like that. You know, like you said, the faults are really what brings the flavor to this game.
Cool. Well, I think we'll actually wrap it up there. I know it was only two questions, but those were two beefy ones. So we'll wrap up with this episode of the Reckless Dice podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Be sure to comment on the site, recklessdice.com, or shoot us an email at recklessdice@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter and Facebook at recklessdice. And also don't forget on iTunes to resubscribe to the podcast. Again, apologize for the inconvenience. Till next time, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for the support, guys.